pacified.
Satyavacha.
By Satyavati. Ma. Not. Evam. Thus. Muhu. Let it be. Iti. Thus. Bhargavaha. The great sage. Ata.
If your son should not become like that.
Kahi. Then. Bhavet.
Should become like that.
Potraha.
The grandson.
Jamadagnihi.
Jamadagni.
Tataha.
Thereafter.
Abhavat.
Was born.
So translation.
Satyavati, however, pacified Ruchikamuni
with peaceful words and requested that his son not be like a fierce Kshatriya.
Ruchikamuni replied, then your grandson will be of a Kshatriya spirit.
Thus Jamadagni was born as the son of Satyavati.
So you can repeat.
Satyavati, however, pacified Ruchikamuni.
With peaceful words and requested
that a son not be like a fierce Kshatriya.
Ruchikamuni replied,
then your grandson will be of a Kshatriya spirit.
Thus Jamadagni was born
as the son of Satyavati.
Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami,
Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The great sage Ruchika was very angry, but somehow or other Satyavati pacified him. And at her request, he changed his mind. It is indicated here that the son of Jamadagni would be born as Parashurama.
It's actually very short, so we're going to read the next few texts until we get to a sizable purport.
Text 12 to 13.
Reno sutam menu kambai jamadagnir vahayam tashambai bhagavad shake sutama sumadadeho yaviyan yatya ite chang rama ityavi vishrutaha.
Translation. Satyavati later became the sacred river Kaushiki to purify the entire world, and her son Jamadagni married Renuka, the daughter of Renu. By the semen of Jamadagni, many sons headed by Vasuman were born from the womb of Renuka. The youngest of them was named Rama or Parashurama.
Text 14.
Yam mahur vasudevam sham vai hayanam kulantakam tri sapta kritvaya himam chakre nikshatriyam mahim.
Learned scholars accept this Parashurama as the celebrated incarnation of Vasudeva who annihilated the dynasty of Kartavira. Parashurama killed all the Kshatriyas on earth 21 times.
And finally, text 15.
Driptam chatram buvo varam abramanyam aninashat rajastamo ritam aham halgunyapi kritem hase.
When the royal dynasty, being excessively proud of the material modes of passion and ignorance, became irreligious and ceased to care for the laws enacted by the Brahmanas, Parashurama killed them. Although their offense was not very severe, he killed them to lessen the burden of the world.
Srila Prabhupada's purport. The Kshatriyas, or the ruling class, must govern the world in accordance with the rules and regulations enacted by great Brahmins and saintly persons. As soon as the ruling class becomes irresponsible in regard to the religious principles, it becomes a burden on the earth. As stated here, Rajastamo Vritam Bharam Abramanyam. When the ruling class is influenced by the lower modes of nature, namely ignorance and passion, it becomes a burden to the world and must then be annihilated by superior power. We actually see from modern history that monarchies have been abolished by various revolutions, but unfortunately the monarchies have been abolished to establish the supremacy of third class and fourth class men. Although monarchies overpowered by the modes of passion and ignorance have been abolished in the world, the inhabitants of the world are still unhappy, for although the qualities of the former monarchs were degraded by taints of ignorance, these monarchs have been replaced by men of the mercantile and worker classes, whose qualities are even more degraded. When the government is actually guided by brahmanas, or God-conscious men, then there can be real happiness for the people. Therefore, in previous times when the ruling class was degraded to the modes of passion and ignorance, the real brahmanas, headed by such kshatriya-spirited brahmanas as Parashuram, killed them 21 consecutive times. In Kali Yuga, stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 12th canto, 2nd chapter, text 13, Dasyu, Prayeshu, Rajasyu. The ruling class, Rajanya, will be no better than plunderers, Dasyus, because the third class and fourth class men will monopolize the affairs of the government, ignoring the religious principles and Brahminical rules and regulations. They will certainly try to plunder the riches of the citizens without consideration. As stated elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 12th canto, 1st chapter, text 40. Asamskrita krihahina rajasa tamasa vitaha apajaste pakshaya shanti mlacharajanyarupinaha. Being unpurified, neglecting to discharge human duties properly, and being influenced by the modes of passion, rajas, and ignorance, tamas, unclean people, while lechers, posing as members of the government, Rajanya Rupanaha, will swallow the citizens, Prajas Te Baksha Yashanti. And still another place in Srimad Bhagavatam, the 12th canto, 2nd chapter, texts 7 to 8, says, Evam Pajabir Dushtabir Akirne Kshiti Mandale Brahmavit Kshatra Sujanam Yobali Bhavitan Rupaha Jai Luptai Rajanyar Nirgrinyar Dashukar Dharma Viki Achinata Rajavena Yashanti Girikananam. Human society is naturally grouped into four divisions as stated in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 1, Mayasur's Dhamma, Gunagami Vibhagashah. But if the system is neglected and the qualities and divisions of society are not considered, the result will be Brahmavit Kshatra Shujanam Yo Bali Bhavita Rupa. The so-called caste system of Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras will be meaningless. As a result, whoever somehow or other becomes powerful will be the king or president, and thus the Prajas or citizens will be so harassed that they will give up hearth and home and will go to the forest, Yashanti Giri Pananam, to escape harassment by government officials who have no mercy and are addicted to the ways of plunderers. Therefore, the Prajas, or the people in general, must take to the Krishna consciousness movement, the Hare Krishna movement, which is the sound incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kali Kale Namarupe Krishna Avatar. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has now appeared as an incarnation by his holy name. Therefore, when the Prajas become Krishna conscious, they can then expect a good government and a good society, a perfect life, and liberation from the bondage
of material existence. So, wonderful purport. So, Om Ganad Tumidandasha, Gananjana Shlakaya, Chakshurda Miditam, Yena Tasmai Shigarabe Namaha. So, the story of Parashuram getting rid of Kartavirya Arjuna is very similar. But Kartavirya Arjuna was not qualified to be the king, and we're going to hear more about the story later on. It's very similar to the story of Vena Maharaj. Of course, there's an interesting story. This story is told in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that once upon a time there was this king named Anga, and he was married to the daughter of fear personified. And because he was married to her, it was a very unfortunate marriage, the son who was born from that marriage was of the quality of the mother. Actually, Prabhupada said, generally, the son takes after the mother and the daughter takes after the father. Of course, there's always exceptions to that. So, in any case, Vena had all the qualities of his mother and the grandparents and everything like that, and he was really bad. So Maharaj Anga got upset with him when Vena was a little kid, and because Vena would go out and play with all of his friends, and he would be the only one who came back, because he would kill his friends. Nice little boy. And so Maharaj Anga was thinking about this, and he was thinking, this is a really bad son, but then he thought, this is from the Bhagavatam, of course. He thought, actually, his son is kind of nice. He's giving me an excuse to head for the hills. So he immediately headed for the hills, as described by Chatika Pandit, Aranya Tena Ganatavyam Yita Aranyam Yita Abraham. If your home is like a forest, you might as well go to the forest. Head for the forest. Anyway, not encouraging anyone to leave their home. Hopefully not. Anyway, so if you're, of course, he talks about it. If the wife doesn't speak pleasingly, apriyavadana. So anyway, so Maharaj Anga headed for the forest, and because there was no one else to take charge of the kingdom, little Vena was left in charge. And Vena, as we mentioned before, had some pretty bad qualities. So what happened is that Vena was harassing the Brahmins, declaring himself to be as good as God. And in those days, the Brahmins were very powerful. Of course, in this day and age, we don't have powerful Brahmins like that. So what they did is they deposed Vena. And the way they deposed him was not just like a political revolution like you see here nowadays. You've got everybody together and they have some big revolution, and you know, all the citizens like that, and they overthrow, like the French Revolution, or you know, I can give so many examples. Like in Libya, they had a revolution. So many places, even in Iran, they had a revolution. I'll talk about that in a few minutes. So it was just simply the Brahmins who were protecting society. They didn't want to become the king or the president or the leader or the manager. They simply wanted to see to the welfare of everyone else. Like Prabhupada said, when he was asked, you know, do you want to be president? Of course, Prabhupada couldn't be president, technically speaking, because he wasn't born in the United States. But Prabhupada was asked, if you want, would you want to be president? Prabhupada said, no, I want to be the advisor to the president. So, anyway, so these Brahmins, they got together, and they did a little mantras, and they killed Vena. But there was a problem when there's no king. When there's no king, it's probably an equal problem, because then all the dacoits come, you know, all the localized people, who start robbing and subscribing. And Vena's kingdom, after Vena was killed, they were just like dust clouds. There were so many dacoits. I remember one time I was in Miami, and there was a riot in one particular section of the city, and you could see the flames coming up higher and higher, hundreds of feet in the air. I was standing on the top of our hotel, which we owned at that particular point in Miami Beach, and you could see flames shooting up high in the air, and the police weren't able to control that. You know, ultimately they put it under control. So it was like that without a king. So the Brahmins were thinking, what do we do? You know, there's no one qualified to be a king. So they did some genetic engineering, churned the body of Vena, and out came Prithu and Archie. Anyway, that's a nice story. So the Brahmins were very expert in that regard. So that was a particular revolution that had some had a positive result, that you got like an incarnation of God from it. Not many revolutions yield an incarnation of God. Neither the French Revolution did not yield an incarnation of God, you know, off with their heads, you know. And of course the leaders, the king and the queen, they were actually quite obnoxious in France, because there was Marie Antoinette, some of you may remember her. And people came to her and said, the citizens are starving, they don't have any bread. And she said, well, they don't have bread, let them eat cake instead. Hare Krishna. So, I mean, they should have been overthrown. But because they were overthrown by the lower classes, then you had something even worse. So in the same way, when I was a very young devotee, I was preaching in the universities. And at that time, Iran was very close to the United States, because the person in charge of the country of Iran was called the Shah of Iran. No relationship to anybody by the name of Shah in India. Anyway, it was the Shah of Iran, and they were actually favorable to Krishna consciousness, because there was one sannyasi in ISKCON who was giving yoga lessons. He went to Iran, he was giving yoga lessons to the daughter of the Shah and the Shahis, you know, the lady was married to the Shah, the Queen Pahlavi or something like that. So they, and when they came to the United States, they went to the Los Angeles Temple. It's pretty nice. So anyway, but somehow or other, the Shah, he was actually kind of good with his citizens, but he was more or less, let us say, I wouldn't say atheistic, but he wasn't like a born-again Muslim. So therefore, there was a theological revolution, or theocratic revolution, against the Shah. And I was talking to the students who were in the United States from Iran, because as I said, I was preaching at the university, that's where I started the story with. So I was talking to them about this revolution, and of course I was preaching to them the way Prabhupada preached to us, that, you know, resolutions, revolutions, dissolutions, no solutions. That's one of Prabhupada's famous sayings in regard to the GBC, actually. The GBC. They were spending so much time, actually, we're spending more time now, spending more time passing resolutions and revolutions and anything like that. So, and Prabhupada just said, all you revolutions, resolutions, revolutions, dissolutions, no solutions. And so they were, anyway, so the students were actually very enthusiastic about throwing out the Shah in this revolution. And I kept telling them, I said, it's not going to make a difference. It's either, as we say in English, Tweedledee or Tweedledum, which means, you know, from the frying pan into the fire. There's different ways that we have expressions in America for these different things. It's the same thing. Because unless you have purified leaders, that means people who are, you know, compassionate, purified, without any lust, anger, greed, then you're just going to be having the same thing or something worse. So they were saying to me, I remember these arguments, these really violent arguments I had. They were saying that, no, it's going to be like heaven. And so, all right, so heaven became like hell. As we know what happened, you know, it's a theocracy. Theocracy means it's controlled by, not Brahmins, but people who were into religion. That was not many that I would say, since here I can't just qualify all of them or just put one general statement about them. But generally, they're into a lot of the externals of religion, you know, how women should dress and things like that, like If a woman doesn't wear her scarf on her head quite right, there's the morality police that beat the woman up in the streets of Tehran. And so they're not actually just enjoying like that. And anyway, and then they became the enemy of the United States, and there's a whole political history that we're not going to get into. So in other words, changing from, you know, the king or the Shah to rule by theocracy, or by the so-called priests, did not make people happy, did not increase the welfare of the country. In fact, you know, the country's basically almost like in war with developing atomic bombs and everything like that, whereas previously things were much better economically and every other which way. And then also you have the example, more recently, of what's called the Arab Spring. Some of you may have heard about that. The Arab Spring sort of began in Tripoli. Tripoli, of course, is the capital of Libya. And they were also, you know, there was so much joy surrounding this whole idea of getting rid of Gaddafi, you know, anyway, and just developing democracy. And in America, we also have this idea of, you know, making the world safe for democracy or spreading democracy everywhere. And, you know, what is a country like that? I remember, that was several years ago, but I remember hearing on the radio, I was listening to NPR, that means National Public Radio, in case you can't figure that one out. And they were interviewing the young people there. They were so hopeful of freedom. You know, just, it was just like looking forward to going back to home, back to God. Just like the Iranians were thinking of, you know, the revolution, getting rid of the Shah. Everything will become perfect. But in the material world, first of all, as stated in the Bhagavatam by Prahlad Maharaj, that the solution, material solutions, are worse, or the cure is worse than the disease, or the solution is worse than the problem that you had. You know, and you see this too, you know, like in America, for example, there's a problem, you need to get to work, so you need cars, you need so many things, and then you actually end up, and you have a housing problem, and then you end up just like working like an ass just to support, just to counter the problem, and you can't actually live in the house because you're actually living in your workplace. That's another issue. So, that's one point. So, getting back to the point of this purport, is we actually need good governments, we need good shepherds in charge. And I was just reading last night about the qualities, this is from the Mahabharata, about the qualities of a king. The king must have, and these qualities were elaborated on by Grandfather Bhishma. Grandfather Bhishma was lying on the bed of arrows after the battle of Kurukshetra, just to give a little history. Yudhisthira Maharaj was thinking, I do not want to take over the kingdom. The reason I don't want to take over the kingdom is because I'm responsible for the deaths of so many people, unprotected ladies, etc., etc., etc. He felt very much unqualified. So in order to encourage him to take over the kingdom, Krishna first spoke to him. And then Krishna brought him to Grandfather Bhishma, and Bhishma was telling him what the necessary qualities of a king or emperor should be. And this actually should apply for all the leaders. Anybody who is a leader taking a management position. So, let me go through a few of them, because they're really interesting. So, of course, this is a king. The first one doesn't refer to the management leaders in the Krishna household movement. So he said, the king, if someone's going to be a king or an emperor, he should be at the forefront of the battle, if there's going to be a battle. Nowadays, of course, the modern politicians, they simply retreat to their underground hideaways. And even the soldiers, in many cases, they're just fighting with joysticks as they're controlling their drones that are bombing. So, but the kingship would be at the front of the army. And his duty is to either conquer the enemy or give up his life in the battle. Those are his options. Pretty good. I mean, people can be very reluctant to declare war in those circumstances. Can you imagine, like, the President of the United States or the Prime Minister of some country or whatever had this rule that he was the Commander-in-Chief, not in name only, but the Commander-in-Chief actually going out there in the battlefield and commanding his army, you know, taking his own chances there, so we'd have a lot less wars. So, of course, there's that story Prabhupada told about the king. One time he went out, didn't defeat his enemy, and he tried to go back home, and his wife wouldn't let him back in the palace. She, I guess she didn't let down the drawbridge. For those of you who don't know what a drawbridge is, that means in the old days they had castles, and then there was a moat around the castle. Anyone heard about that? No. Nobody knows about that. I was brought up with all these fairy tales like that about Europe. And there was a moat around there, and they had a drawbridge to go across. But she wouldn't let down the drawbridge. She said, "You're not my husband." And he said, "Why? What are you saying this, dear Priya?" And she said, "Because you have not either died or conquered your enemy, you coward." And so with those nice, sweet words from his wife, he went back out on the battlefield and conquered his enemy, and his wife let him back in, and he gave him a nice hug when he came back in, let him into the house. So that's the first duty Grandfather Bhishma says that a king must have. In other words, you have to deal with enemies. You can't simply be engaged in nonviolence. I mean, there are enemies in this world if you're a king. And of course, you're a Brahmin, you don't consider someone to be your enemy. I understand that. But if you're a king, you've got to protect your citizens. So that means taking to arms. And the second quality is also in regard to fighting. It's interesting that when Grandfather Bhishma elaborated on the qualities of a kshatriya, the first two qualities basically were had to do with martial arts and fighting. He says the king must be ready to fight against family members if necessary. Must be ready to fight, of course this is in reference to the battle of Kurukshetra, must be ready to even kill his guru if any of these people would become unrighteous. Don't get any ideas. So, he must be, in other words, he has to give up all personal consideration. And of course we see, in the case of Lord Ramchandra, of course he didn't kill family members, but, and he didn't kill his guru, but he sends his wife away, Sita Devi away, because it wasn't going to interfere with the ruling of the kingdom. In other words, you have to give up all personal considerations and consider the welfare of the citizens as primary, as your first priority. In other words, the citizens are just as important as your own children, as your own family, or as your guru. You know, if the guru is giving bad advice. Okay, so those are the heavy ones. And then the other ones get a little bit easier. The next quality he lists is it must be a devotee of the Lord. The king must be a devotee. He can't just be a rakshasa. And the next one is must worship the brahmanas. Very important. We see that in the case of Lord Ram and Yudhisthira Maharaj and every saint and king that's ever existed has worshipped the brahmanas. We can just read the Vedic history. Mm-hmm. And the next quality Yudhisthira Maharaj has taught by Grandfather Bhishma is he must be a perfect example. He must be a role model for others. In other words, he's viewed 24 hours a day. He can't have any fault. He shouldn't give cause for people to criticize him. And he should always, in this regard, always speak the truth. Because if he lies at any time, people will distrust him. Like you see that with Lord Ram. talking again about Lord Rama, because Lord Rama is the ideal king. It's described he had one wife, one word, and one arrow. So, of course, many kings in the Vedas, as my understood, had many wives. We're not criticizing them. But one word. In other words, he would never speak anything that was not truthful, never engage, even in hyperbole. That means exaggeration in order to accomplish something. He would always be extremely truthful. Another quality, as far as an example, is that he would be extremely humble. In other words, he wouldn't brag about himself. He wouldn't say, I'm the best this or the best that. I mean, this is how we should judge leaders. Of course, we don't have kings nowadays. We should judge leaders based on that. And if he had any weakness, Grandfather Bhishma describes, he should conceal it. Like if he had some sentimental mentality. You know, everyone has a little bit of weakness here and there. But it's not that he talks about it, his weakness, in front of all the citizens, because the citizens have to have full faith in him. I mean, it's not that he's hiding anything. But let's say he's a little sentimental about, I don't know what, he likes gold, or he likes, what other weaknesses or whatever. I mean, and people have to, or he likes sports cars or something. Teslas or something. Then he doesn't talk about those things, his weaknesses, like that. And, all right, so these are his personal qualities. And also he's fair. He's, like you have in the Bible, of course, you have King Solomon, who's very fair and able to pass judgment immediately and have some... And Yudhisthira Maharaj was like that too. Even he, of course, Lord Rama. Let's talk about Lord Rama. There's that story about the dog who was complaining. I'm not going to tell the whole story again because you've all heard it a million times. The dog who was complaining about a Brahmin, and he passed judgment on a Brahmin because of the dog's complaint. So he was fair to everybody. But on the other side, he's not too mild. You know, he's well balanced. He's not just tough. You know, he has compassion, but he's not too soft-hearted because then people will take advantage. And he doesn't mingle with too much familiarity with the subject, because the subjects will take him for granted after some time. So, you know, of course, he does have his familial relationships with his family. Another thing that Grandfather Bhishma lists is that he keeps his plan secret. Actually, Prabhupada did that one time. Devotees asked Prabhupada, what are your plans? And the Prabhupada said, if I told you, they'd be spoiled. So, of course, we have to have practical plans, you know, like renovating a building or something like that. But if one has of a king, has really like long-term plans, like Prabhupada did. Prabhupada was actually not a kshatriya, but Prabhupada said the preaching of Krishna consciousness is done in the kshatriya mood and enthusiastic mood. Like Prabhupada said, let me die like a kshatriya on the battlefield, like Arjuna. So this is our Krishna consciousness in Kali Yuga. The king is also supposed to be very decisive. In other words, he makes a decision and he sticks to it. He shouldn't vacillate. Of course, he gets other information. He can change his mind, but not that he's seen as, you know, vacillating all the time from one thing to another. And another thing that's interesting, he's supposed to dress gorgeously. In other words, because this is part of getting respect for the citizens. You know, if he dresses like an avaduta, nobody's going to respect him. So he has to have some beautiful earrings. Like you see the kings, they have crowns. Even though that's it's a pain to wear a crown all the time. Of course, I've never worn a crown, so I wouldn't know. But I would assume so. That when you wear this thing on your head, it's just like, oh my God, why can't I just sleep properly? No, of course they didn't wear it. Slept. So, but he did that not for his own personal joy, but because it people would respect him. Respect is necessary if you're a king. Lord Chaitanya even took sannyas so that people would listen to him and respect him. Because people were not respecting, even his own students were not respecting him. When he told them, you know, he was one time he was chanting the names of the gopis, and the students started chastising him. And Lord Chaitanya understood, you know, this is not really good for them, not good for my preaching mission, so take a sannyas. So sometimes the king had to make some external adjustments so that people will respect him. And another thing is the king should not deal with behind people's backs. He should be very forthcoming, very open. If there's some discrepancy, some conflict, he can bring everybody together rather than just engage in fault finding behind people's backs. Very important for leaders. And he studies the Shastras. It's described by Grandfather Bhishma later on in this whole description that there's a need for a king because people are rascals. He described in Satyuga there was no king. People didn't need a king in Satyuga. But because people started to do crazy things after Satyuga, then Lord Brahma established, at least in our universe, Lord Brahma established the rules for the kings. This is called, the rules for kings are called Danda Niti. Danda means stick. I mean, so Danda Niti basically means the rules for punishment and ruling. And later on, these rules were compiled by different demigods, the Lord Shiva, and other personalities. We have a lot more to talk about kings and leaders, but there's not enough time. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai, Srila Prabhupada, ki jai.